Hi, I'm Kate Luckins from Sustainable Lifestyle, and I'm very, very lucky to be chatting with Kelly Barrett, who has over 20 years industry experience in the fashion industry. And she's created this incredible brand, Underwear for Humanity, based on her 20 years of specific underwear experience, is my understanding. And Kelly has grand ambitions about how one brand can achieve so much for both people and the planet. So I'm very excited to have Kelly to chat to this week. So I guess what I'm wondering to start with, Kelly, is what did you see your role and opportunity to be in creating a new fashion brand focused on underwear?
Yeah, I'd been studying sustainability and felt that there was a lot of knowledge. There was a lot of incredible knowledge that was sitting on the shelf for 20 years that I wasn't seeing a connection with industry. Felt like they weren't speaking, academics and industry weren't speaking to each other. And that was really frustrating because a lot of time had passed and you know, more good could have been done. And yeah, I felt like there was an opportunity to do a brand that was based on a restorative system, you know, like the whole theories around the forest and nothing is wasted, you know, and what can we do in a really systematic way that is restorative at all its touch points as a whole model rather than just you know, moving out of linear into circular, like how can a whole brand's model be more circular in that thinking as well?
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
yeah, if that makes sense. So, a lot of energy on all the touch points and, yeah, being really uncompromising because if I'm putting something out into the world, can I stand by that product and not be causing more harm? So, yeah. A lot of
Absolutely.
energy.
So when you say touch points, what do you mean? Do you mean the sort of different steps within the fashion cycle or?
Yeah. So, oh, have I, am I still there?
I was trying to do something clever. I was meaning to make it you. I thought that would go straight to your beautiful face and it just put me on a, no.
I did have a shower this morning, which is good, but yeah, so yeah, so touch points in, you know, the manufacturing being ethical, people being paid above a living wage, what are we doing around shipping, ensuring that we're not using, you know, air, we're doing like warehousing and pick and pack, what can that do? So I feel like any time that money is passing from one hand to another, rather than it just being, I don't know, I'm not saying wasted, like there's obviously a lot of good businesses around, but that money is really powerful. And I think that's the whole thing about the brand. Like our money is really powerful. So what can it do? So the warehousing and pick and pack, instead of just being to, you know, a regular business, is going to as another social enterprise that is training youth in work skills and getting their CV together and getting them used to like the structure of coming to work, getting them ready to get another full-time job. So then, what else? I guess like I can't remember the question. Was it just about being restorative or was it the actual product being sustainable? Because
Oh,
yeah.
I was just asking about the opportunities that you saw, and you wanted to create something. My understanding is you wanted to create something which was circular and regenerative, and you wanted to look at all the different touch points and see different opportunities to do those things. So basically, take it in a holistic way. And I just wondered what some of those touch points were.
Yeah. So the warehousing is really important. And then I think any time, like if I need to pay someone to do graphics, like who am I paying to do that? You know, is it an opportunity for somebody? I feel like any points of the business, and there's so many, there's opportunity to include more people that are falling through the system and need an opportunity. Yeah.
Amazing. That's incredible. So who exactly makes that your products and how does, what you do with that differ from the industry norm?
Yeah, so it's made in a factory in China, so that is industry norm. I think that 80% of the industry is China, so you know, mm-hmm. China is a huge player in manufacturing fashion. So that is as per industry. But the factory has really high standards of, you know, I think even higher than Australia, actually, employer rights, mm-hmm. maternity care, medical, mm-hmm. you know, work safety, and payment, like I said, 60% over the living wage. But also the factory itself has solar. And that's something just from working together, it's like, well, what government subsidies are there in China? Like, and it's different by province to province. Actually, there's not a standard across, but some provinces are really highly supported to put solar in. But it's just the negotiations with the factory, because then they don't think of that necessarily. Like, I haven't come across any factories that think like that. So it's like, can you please investigate this? Can you please, you know, it will help you too. It will lower your, you know, energy bills. It has to be a win for them. You know, there's power outages in China. Well, you won't be, you'll still have electricity because you'll have your own power, you know, things like that, where it's a benefit to them. So yeah, I guess the fashion industry, as you know, is mostly driven by price, and that's evolved our industry a lot, hasn't it? So, you know, you have leather goods like made in Italy. It's like that whole industry is almost dead because it's all moved to Bangladesh. But then you have chromium in the water where people are drinking and swimming, and like it comes at a cost. You know, we don't get these cheap handbags suddenly. Just because it's moved countries, you know, it's a human cost. And so the industry is, you know, really guilty of that, really guilty of just going after price and not really knowing the details. Yeah.
So you foster quite a transparent discussion with your factories, obviously, and then you pay well and above a living wage, which the industry norm is, again, regardless on the garment price, that's not the industry norm at all, is it?
It's not. Everyone's chasing price. It's sad. We're kind of caught in a system now that we're all kind of used to. You know, everything's cheap. We expect it to be cheap, but it's come at a great price. And it's almost just like, I have great compassion for consumers. I feel like it's taking off those blinkers is really difficult to do. At one point, I was angry. Like a few years ago, I was like, fuck. Oh, sorry, don't know if I should be swearing. But, you know, so many people were, I was just angry. I was like, you know, why is it like this? Why are people spending money on these things? And then over time, I've actually grown huge compassion. I don't feel like that at all. I feel like we don't realize what we're doing. It's very hidden. No one goes out to cause chromium, you know, poisoning in a child in Bangladesh. No one wants to do that. They just think this bag is really inexpensive, you know, and why would I buy the Italian one? You know, it's done very innocently. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's such a complicated thing. And anytime you try and find, you know, a golden rule you can stick to, like, oh, it's made locally. And, you know, people tend to think, oh, that's better than made in a factory in China. But you've just opened up by saying that some of the guidelines and processes and whatnot are more stringent in China in favor of the workers' well-being. So, you know, you think local's better? No, not necessarily. You pay a higher price per garment and you think, oh, well, surely someone's getting paid well if I'm, you know, investing more. That's no guarantee whatsoever. Like anything that you might cling to, it's all you can really hope for is a label that's as forthcoming and transparent as what you're doing with Underwear for Humanity. So just looking for people to disclose and make you aware of what's actually going on with that. And I know on your website you have really specific references to the factories and the people, and you know, that willingness to disclose is very, very reassuring to the consumer, I imagine.
Yeah, actually, Kate, I'm working on an impact report. I've been working on it for so many months that I'm sick of it, but I was hoping to publish it this week. But and in that impact report, it has where our money goes, how much profit is on each item, yeah, it's has everything in there. So it's even more transparent than the website. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Which is, it's quite revolutionary. I can remember, yeah, buying a bag years ago from a label just because I was excited that they literally broke things down. I was like, well, I've got to support this with my dollars. Like, this is obviously the backpack I'm going to buy.
I do the same. Like, Sheep Ink I've bought from, yeah, because it's just like, do I need a jumper? I'm not saying that we should buy things we don't need, but when I see companies like that, I'm the same. I'm like, I need to support them. Yeah, I want them to survive.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess closer to home, I noticed also something that you do with Underwear for Humanity is make a point of paying the rent. Could you describe what that is and, yeah, what value that has?
Yeah, so obviously a massive subject in Australia, Indigenous rights and where we're at with, you know, equality. And so the brand, yeah, I couldn't sell something without that, at least an acknowledgement and putting some money towards funds for Aboriginal projects. So, yeah, we do 50 cents. We started off at 10 cents and then as soon as we could afford it, I went to 50 cents per item. And so we work in a few spots. So we pay in different spots that we work in. So we've got a few that we pay to. So the Pay the Rent organization in Victoria, they use it for all sorts of things with, you know, funerals, legal rights, all sorts of different things they use the money for. And then I work on Bundjalung land. So I work with a local woman and she's working on an amazing project. Hasn't happened yet, but she's working on it right now, which is really cool. So I'd love there to be a little bit of storytelling, but at the same time, I feel that there's no hoops to jump through. Like, the money is deserved and they can do whatever they feel is right for them and their, you know, their community. So yeah, it's really important to me. Yeah. And I just, with the brand, it's not just the 50 cents, it's anything I can do. Like, we've done a fundraising brief with a print to help an Aboriginal incubator, business incubator, and we use Aboriginal talent where possible as well, just to sort of like do whatever support we can, because there isn't economic inclusion for Aboriginal people in Australia. There isn't. Like, it's proven. They're not included. And I feel like the least we can do, when the cultures are so incredibly different, the least we can do is have economic inclusion. So that's something I feel that I can take part in as a non-Aboriginal woman. Yeah.
And it looks like you've seized like opportunities in different contexts to make a contribution and to show respect. It's not just a single like lip service thing, like there's layers to it. And I guess the general premise of paying the rent is that it's location based. So you're actually covering, making that contribution across your variety of locations and then seeking for other opportunities to incubate and support Indigenous talent. So it's a higher level of engagement than many businesses do. And I'm interested, the way that you work that into your business model is a per item contribution with the 50 cents, that's right?
Yeah, because again, the money can work hard. Hey, so if you're buying the undies, why not have that? That the more undies you sell, the more you can give, you know, like,
yeah.
And the more business, yeah, the more business could grows, the more they should be paying. Like, that just makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, but also if you are starting out, you know, if somebody was had a startup, it's a great way to scale the contribution.
It is, yeah. Definitely.
Now, in terms of the money working hard, going to the next level of what you've created, which I find amazing, I understand when I bought my undies from you, you would have donated a pair for each one that I bought to somebody else who was in need of such underpants. So can you tell me about that? Because that's like, not only are you making the one pair of pants do a lot of work, you've got a second pair of pants entering the equation to do good. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I had another brand that I did this with previously called Silent Arrow. And then it was something that was really close to my heart and something that it was really important for me to continue for this brand as well. And what I found in the past, because, you know, like you said, I've been doing underwear for 20 years, I would donate samples and things and not, you know, you don't really value your own things much. Do you just like, oh, yeah, there's some undies. You know, you don't really think that's really important. Excuse me. So I remember going to a teenage foster care agency. I was doing some work with and some training. Anyway, I took a box of samples that I had in the office and I was like, oh, I'll just, they might need them, might be useful. And because it was like a direct, we'd given away so many, but because it was a direct contact and they were able to give me feedback, I found out that they were extremely powerful and that those teenagers who don't have continuity of care because they move, I think it's average 7 houses, no one buys them essentials like that. And so it's really affects their dignity. So that had a really profound effect on me, that something that I thought didn't have a lot of value was extremely valued to somebody else. And so, and of course, you know, there's so many people that need the undies, like from homelessness and women in shelters. There's so many, and charities have to use the money that they have to buy it at retail. That's what they do. So Salvos or whoever, they'll go to a cheap store and buy packs of underwear to give away. And so they can't access it. We know that there's too many clothes in the world and that you can easily wash a jumper and wear it again. So these charities don't need clothing. There's too much clothing, as we know.
Absolutely.
Way too much clothing. But you can't donate undies, old undies. No one wants to wear old undies. It's unhygienic. Charities won't accept them. Even if you could make it hygienic, they're not going to accept them. So they have to buy new undies. So Underwear for Humanity is a resource for those charities. So we don't go directly to each individual. We work with different charities and they request it and we give them, yeah. So I love it. It's a really great part of the business. I really enjoy it, that it's helping a lot of people, thousands of people, to access undies, because it's not as important as food if you've got nothing, but it is actually really important for dignity. Yeah.
So is there one particular charity, or you share these undies amongst various initiatives?
So many different charities, so many different ones. Yeah.
Everyone needs the underpants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a business, like if an Aboriginal charity comes to us or Women's Centre, we always prioritise them. But, yeah, all sorts of Days for Girls. The list is so long. Actually, it'll be in the impact report. Every single person who's received it is in the impact report. Yeah. Yeah. There's about 20.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, they're also great, beautifully designed, wonderfully colored underpants, and then they're doing all this good for people and planet. It's amazing. So I know also in terms of your business, you thought that this was a wonderful opportunity for you to trailblaze and innovate with new recycling technologies. And you were trying to, you know, experiment with some of the technologies and achieve some of the things that the industry has struggled to pull off. So can you share some insights into some of those behind the scenes experiments you've been running?
Well, recycling, unfortunately, for the fashion industry is at its infancy. And as much as, you know, H&M might say that they're taking back and turning into garments, like it's very limited. It's very, very, very limited. And a lot of the technology is at lab stage. And so I feel like underwear is not the lowest hanging fruit. So as an industry, you know, we need to start with sheets and towels and uniforms. You know, we need to start with monofibers. We need to start with something that's repeated and doesn't change. Fashion, which has such variants, is not the lowest hanging fruit. And underwear is even worse. So you've got in a bra, you know, there's 26 components, all different. There's like polyurethane, polyester laminate, nylon, elastane. Yeah, the list is sometimes cotton. But like the list is really, really long in one product. And so it's not very suitable for recycling. And to pull that apart would cost more than a bra costs now at retail. So it's just, it's a very difficult scenario. However, how can I put something else out in the world if I'm not going to take responsibility for it? Like that would be breaking my brand promise. You know, I can't do that. So what I do is extract the absolute most value I can out of something that is complex, multi-fiber, has hygiene issues. So what we do is we sort any bras that are in good condition that people send us go to Support the Girls. So they get Reworn, which is a charity in Queensland. And so they go to women who can't afford bras. And, you know, maybe one day in the future when we're scaled and they can't take any more, then there's a whole list of other organisations that need them in specific countries. We would never just send them like, you know, happens in Ghana, all their rubbish. So, and the underwear, so that's the bras, and then anything that's not good enough can get broken down as well as the underwear. So the underwear and the bras have got this, and unwearable bras have got the same stream. So they will get downcycled. Anything that can be extracted that can be recycled or upcycled is, such as the metal wires, the foam cups, because it goes to India, so the foam cups are of value there. The mixed fibers, they actually shred the mixed fibers and do spin them together, which is really interesting, into a coarse, a really coarse yarn that they make blankets from. So they extract every little bit they can out of it. Anything that can't be used, reused, or respun is used for insulation.
And that's based in India.
Yeah. It's a SEDEX approved facility. Yeah, in India.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what have you achieved with the, I remember reading something about recycled elastane. Did you, was there a little revelation with that that you came across?
No, recycled elastane does exist. It is hard to use and to access. Like I've tried to use it in the bras and at this stage, it's just, this is the thing where these things are not, it's, the demand's not big enough yet, to be honest. And as a little business, if the demand's not there, it's really tricky. Like I've tried to get recycled elastane in the bras and the gauge that it needs to be, and it's just not available. No one needs it, so it's not made. And the minimum for me would be, you know, I don't know, 200,000 bras or something crazy. It'd be great in the future to be able to dictate stuff like that. It'd be really cool. But the elastic, I've developed the elastic with quite a big company, and so they can access those materials, so it's easier. So the elastic is made from recycled nylon and recycled elastane, so it's 100% recycled. Yeah.
And you've put that agreement together. You put that process together, so that you can access that. And then can other fashion labels also access the same material because of what you've put out there and made available?
They can, And the recycled nylon for the seam-free bras is, this, same thing. I worked for years on that and now it is accessible and bigger brands are using it, which is great. I love that. Yeah. I love that the research is being used. It's wonderful. Like recycled products are, you know, 70%+ lower in emissions, so we want to have recycled synthetics. So that's a win.
Yeah. So this is this the kind of spirit of what you hope, you know, you're showing by way of leadership? Is this the influence you're hoping to have to incubate the good ideas, prove that they're possible, and then have other people adopt them as well, so that the impact is more widely spread?
Yeah, definitely. And, so that's from an industry perspective. And just being able to see something exists means it's possible, you know. So I think having not just a theoretical idea around, you know, what could be circular and what can be inclusive, but to actually see it functioning, I think is really important for us all, industry and consumers. It's kind of like, oh, okay, I could do that then. That's possible. You know, we do need to see things, representation, you know, different models, everything. We need to visually see it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've thoroughly enjoyed watching and learning about your business because, yeah, the size inclusion, we haven't even touched upon that, but that's incredible. And again, you know, participating at the forefront of what people want and what the industry needs. You know, your labor ethics, your sustainability, your circularity, all that stuff. I remember when we first started talking, I was amazed at how you're approaching all these things from different angles to create one very remarkable business in underwear for humanity. So I definitely encourage people who sometimes, you know, you can feel a little bit frustrated or angry or disheartened about where things are at. There's definitely a story of excitement and hope in what you're sharing. And certainly I will be keeping my eyes open for the impact report, which sounds like an incredible resource for people to learn from.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we keep our eyes on the website, don't we? Is that where that's going to land?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to land soon. Yeah. It just takes so long. Small business, startup, low resources.
Well, and you're trying to do some pretty complicated things that most people would be too terrified by. So give yourself a little leniency there. But thanks so much for sharing how you're approaching your business in such an innovative, revolutionary way. I really appreciate it, Kelly. Thanks.
Thanks, Kate. Great to be with you.